6 o'clock, so I will call this joint work session with the City of Walport City Council to order. These work sessions are an opportunity for the county and the city to talk about items of mutual interest, and county commissioners visit with each of the city councils in the tribe once a year, so this is our annual visit. Welcome all, and we'll start with introductions, and we'll start with the city council.
Okay, I'm Kevin Yorks.
Harry Dennis.
Dan Cutter.
Sue Leader.
Claire Hall, county commissioner.
Doug Hunt, commissioner.
Harry Thompson, commissioner.
All right, and we have an agenda that is developed between both the city and the council. There are items that the county has put on the agenda, and there are items that the city has put on the agenda. And the first item would be materials management plan for Lincoln County and biosolids. And we have the director of our solid waste district here, and Mark, I'll turn it over to you.
So first of all, Mark Salem, Lincoln County Solid Waste District. I appreciate you being able to accommodate doing this presentation during the joint meeting. Normally we wouldn't have the extra time to a joint meeting agenda, but in trying to work out making this presentation to the City of Walport in particular, it just wasn't working to get it into their regular schedule. And the importance of that is we're trying to go around and present this plan to all seven cities before hopefully final adoption on June 27th by the Board of Commissioners. And then in this particular case, I should point out that I'm here serving as staff for the Solid Waste Advisory Committee. And in this case, we'll do a little correction. Janice was our representative, and Susan is playing that role, and of course has been on the SWAC in the past. So that slide is already out of date.
We may change it.
So be careful because it could be anyone's name that goes up there. So, and then Chuck Lurwick from Dahl Disposal. For those of you who may not know, we reinstituted the SWAC, about 5-6 years ago. It now contains all three franchise haulers as well as all seven cities like it always has if they choose to participate. At this point in time, we've had full participation pretty much other than Toledo and Celeste kind of struggle to show up very often. But they'll be getting this presentation as well. So what is it we want to do? We're going to give you some very quick background. I'm not going to spend very much time. You've got a copy of the plan. There's some interesting reading in there. I'll cover just a real quick brief overview of what the plan contains. And what we really want to focus on is the plan recommendations. Think of it in terms of you have your three professional recycling waste companies and all the representatives throughout the county working on what are the best things that we could recommend that are likely to improve solid waste / overall materials management in the county moving forward. And that's what we'll be presenting, is that consolidation of what the best recommendations were after almost a year and a half of work. We did work with a consultant, Bell & Associates, for about 80% of the plan, and then I won't get into the details why we weren't really able to finish up the way we wanted to, so at that point, the SWAC, using me as their staff, more or less finished the plan. So a little bit of quick background on how and why the plan was developed. In December of 2014, Lincoln County, along with counties across the state, adopted a new recovery goal. Our recovery goal was at 20% and had been for years. The decision was made to set a goal of 35% by 2020 and 37% by 2025. So what does that mean? Basically, you just take the amount of material recovered divided by total materials. And at the time we set this goal, DEQ was going around the state encouraging every county to set more inspiring goals to reach for. We had already reached a peak of 38.2%. However, it relied on a heavy component of Georgia-Pacific woody debris sales in the form of hog fuel. That can represent upwards of 20-25% of our recovery in any given year. So during 2015 and 2016, the Solid Waste Advisory Committee realized that the easy recycling had been taken care of and that additional materials were often expensive to collect in a little value And as I just said, the GP mill is no longer going to be burning hog fuel. Fortunately, we were given a heads up of over a year, knowing that that was coming, then we needed to deal with it. Also, fortunately, through a Senate bill that passed 2 or 3 years ago, DEQ was reinfused with money, part of which was to reinvoke their solid waste grants program that had been shut down for a number of years. So we successfully applied for grant money to write this plan and received 50% assistance. History of Lincoln County Recycling, just real quick. In the following slides, you'll see what I'm actually going to state here up front. We've done a pretty impressive job for rural county. From 1999 to 2012, the state increased its recovery rate by 12.9%. Here in Lincoln County, we increased it by 17%. Looking at another little snapshot, 2006 to 2012, the state increased its recovery by 6.2%. Lincoln County was up 10%. However, even with all that success, times have changed. When we started writing the plan, nobody had any inkling that this whole China recycling fiasco was going to happen. That doesn't impact us a lot in terms of total weight, but it does impact us a lot in things like, how do you keep people engaged in recycling? How do you keep them doing what they're doing? Even though there are much bigger fish to fry, i.e. woody debris and food waste. So here's the slide. You can see that basically we continue to come up, and in fact we continue to increase our recovery rate even during the recession. This compares us to the state. No surprise that we track similarly to the state. Our percentage being on the left-hand axis, the state on the right. So, you know, the state was so proud to announce that they had reached their 50% goal. Well, they're struggling to keep that now. This one didn't come out as well as it should, but I'll explain what it tells you. In essence, during a recession, there's a downturn in the amount of trash typically that's put in the garbage. There's less consumerism, less throwing stuff away. But that tendency of solid waste is now tending to, the whole idea that it's always happened that way is breaking apart. So in Lincoln County, we, after about 4 or 5 years, we started seeing kind of a drastic increase in trash receipts, largely driven by one big component, tourism. And yet, we continue to have this bumpy increase in our recovery rate. And the only way you can do that is to be recovering more materials more quickly than the trash receipts, than the trash receipts going up. And again, that's, you know, all based on our education, our consumers, and the jobs that our local franchise hauler companies do. This really should just say, what should we do now? The other part didn't get the slide out of here in time. So materials management plan, how is that different than solid waste management? Materials management takes a holistic view of the environmental impacts across the full cycle of materials, as well as actions that can be taken to reduce those impacts. It includes resource extraction, the use of recovered materials, the design and production of materials, their use and end-of-life management, including what we typically call waste disposal recovery. This, in fact, was one of the central pieces of DEQ's Vision 2050, a vision and framework for action. That was approved a number of years ago. It doesn't really tell the counties or the cities what to do. It just sets a vision out there. And in their document, they lay out those same things we should be thinking about. Unfortunately, we really only have control over two of those elements. We can do a better education job and potentially impact consumption and how people use materials. And we can focus on our solid waste collection system. But there's still a lot we can do in terms of our recommendations of how to best do that. And that's really what the Solid Waste Advisory Committee has focused on for the last year. And as I said earlier, the China ban came along midstream. They gave us a chance to at least write up a chapter on that and have some reaction to it. So in the overall report, there's all these sections. You might, depending on who you are, find some of the introduction background, the local conditions, what our system has looked like historically. All that stuff will be an interesting read. But then we get to the real point of this presentation, which was just the recommendations that came out of all of that. There are 10 of them. The first five, I'll say they're somewhat new, and I'll explain why that is. Number 6 through 10 are really putting the stamp of approval of continuing with what we've always done, maybe with a little bit of, you know, increased capability or something like that, but they're all items that are happening right now. And unfortunately, I didn't have popcorn, so I probably got Commissioner Thompson about asleep. So we'll get to the recommendations. First, woody debris. And if you expand out to be woody debris and food waste, it is the single largest component, not only in Lincoln County, although we have an extra big component of woody debris. But statewide and nationally, upwards of 35% of what goes to the landfill is woody debris and food waste. Luckily, we were able to implement a successful organics program in the Thompson area, first for the city of Newport, and then for the city of Newport, as well as the county proper area that Thompson controls. And we were able to see from that 31% of their recovered material in 2017 was woody debris and food waste, very consistent with what you would expect.
So, Mark, when you say organics program, is that what the Thompsons call combustible or
compostable?
Yeah, you can call it woody debris and food waste.
I guess woody debris would be combustible.
Compostable we just negotiated and approved.
Signed on to
that. Yeah, I was going
to
say, Dahls is working on that.
Dahls is working on it. So, what's awesome about it is just in this. Well, because of the time ban, and because your key players, city councilors and haulers, have been involved in this, some of these things you'll undoubtedly notice were already achieved. But I should point out at this point, too, that it's a list of recommendations at the point that the Board of Commissioners chooses to adopt them. That's what they are, their recommendations. It means the expectation will be that the Solid Waste Advisory Committee will continue to evaluate those for when the right time might be. It doesn't mean we go out and find the money to do all 10 of these next year, because I'll guarantee you we can't. And then for the county as a whole, the really impressive part is just Thompson's program represented 7 to 10% of the recovery for the entire county. So that gives you some idea of the magnitude of the food waste and woody debris program.
So I have a question about this. So my understanding of the program is that this now allows you to dump yard material, grass, whatever, in these containers. Now, presumably some of that, may have been going into the landfill, but my guess is that most of that probably wasn't. I know that I dump the grass off in a pile and it decomposes and I don't pay much attention. Are we accounting for the fact that we've actually increased the tonnage by increasing this new material that maybe wasn't headed to the landfill, and then we're counting it against our recovery?
Right. It's a very good question, and there's really no way to answer it perfectly, because as you say, like in the case of my many of the people I know, they started putting things into their bin that they otherwise be really rude. In some cases, were thrown off on somebody else's property. I'm sure everyone in this room has seen somebody who dumps their grass clippings on somebody else's vacant lot, and yet others are paying the bill of hauling it to the transfer station. So, this number I'm giving you is kind of a gross estimate. There's really no way to tease out those details.
Have we seen a corresponding decrease in tonnage, coming to the transfer station from just garbage?
You should, but what we've got is we've got the complication of the annual influx of tourism. If you look instead at, say, what remains in terms of how successfully, say, North Lincoln and Dahls have been able to deal with their woody debris, basically you see it contract a lot, largely with Dahls, largely because of the GP not burning anymore. In the case of North Lincoln Sanitary, in order to keep doing what they were doing, they were going to have to find a new vendor to purchase their woody debris and a long ways away. And so that increased rates to do that. So in a not direct scientific way, but you did see this contraction of how the rest of the woody debris was not being handled and you could compare that against past years. And the other, I think, interesting thing is that this 31% fits right in with what lots of documents estimate in terms of how much weight of debris in yard waste is there in a typical community. But no perfect answer. Okay, so let's see, next. Consider instituting a countywide environmental impact fee. This was a really hot topic. It originally came out as sort of a, we for sure should do this, okay? And then there were a couple of, one or two opposed to the idea versus the rest of the SWAC thinking that it's at least something that we should leave open to study. And that's how you ended up with this, form some kind of a stakeholder group, including, you know, hotels, motels, all the people that would be impacted. The basic concept is, we have so many tourists, yes, they drive our economy, but we also have our rate base paying for all the infrastructure that's necessary to handle that influx. Depending on which side of the fence that you're on, you may or may not see that as the most equitable way to do it. So the idea was, yes, not lose the idea, but probably needs more of a look. Franchise agreements, the second most controversial one. Obviously, the county does not control the franchise agreements in the cities. And again, this was one where it explains part of why we parted ways with our contractor. They were like, you don't do this, you're done. Nothing's going to happen. And no improvements will be made. So it did recognize that the county, in fact, could decide to experiment with some kind of modernized franchise agreement to test how it works. And then if it is a better situation, it can be put out there as a model for cities. Now, interestingly, I will share with you that when I presented this to the Newport City Council Monday night, Councilor Engler actually said she's had numerous constituents come to her and say, why aren't we modernizing the franchise agreements? So it's another one of those things where, you know, there's kind of two ways. Probably wouldn't be very smart to say, oh, for the next 20 years, we don't want anything about doing this. So that's the spirit of this one is you could choose to say, okay, it's whack. For the next 6 months, we're going to dive into franchise agreements and learn all about them and whether there's anything we should do.
What does modernize mean?
If you go out even across Oregon, you know, it's not real common to have the kind of setup we have, and Chuck would be a good one to ask about more details. A lot of counties operate their entire solid waste system and then let contracts to individual companies. So modernize is just recognizing that the agreements we have really haven't changed much at all. Now, having said that, part of the answer is we do this annual rate adjustment, and an awful lot of things happen there. That's about the best I can describe it. It's just that the original agreements are pretty old. They still serve their purpose, but there's an opposing force that says that those ought to be looked at least for any kind of best practices that are happening in other parts of the state. Implement a countywide school district waste reduction and recycling program, utilizing the Oregon Green Schools where appropriate. We have always had pretty good effort in this county, for as long as I've been here, of getting in the schools to do education. We have always had, through our haulers, through the district, pairing up with a really, you know, excited science teacher or somebody else and getting the Oregon Green Schools-like program going. Unfortunately, those best teachers end up leaving the county. And then you're back to square one, nothing happens for 3 or 4 years. So this one was designed, if you begin the reading about it, you will see that it says to truly move forward, we need to move towards having materials management, solid waste, recycling, education integrated into our school district. Okay, and it will take the efforts of the school district, the haulers, the solid waste district, perhaps even the cities. Fortunately, while this school was being developed, we actually received a grant from DEQ, mostly in terms of some materials and services, not a big one, around $10,000. And we've got Newport Middle School, and then soon to follow Sam Case, in line to achieve Oregon Green School status. And talking with DEQ staff, they are inviting, fully expect, submit another grant to extend it to more of the county. Good reason for that. Go try to find an Oregon Green School on the Oregon coast. It's very valley centered. That doesn't mean that there aren't a lot of educational things that can't benefit our school district. And I should put in my plug for the school district itself. When we went in for this grant, a lot of my colleagues said, well, how did you get that? Well, the school district put in a $15,000 match, an actual teacher time and an actual curriculum, an actual class that gets taught on this. That's a key to remember. Monitoring waste and recycling, this is the last one I haven't talked very much about. The idea here is, I'll use North Lincoln Sanitary as the best example. They provide a monthly report. We get the trash tonnage every month through our user fee. We typically don't know, and Susan will recall this, what our recovery rate is or how much recycling we had until the end of the year. And then that number is not official until 6 or 7 months after that when the EQ gets done. That kind of information is useless in terms of planning a situation where recycling is changing rapidly like it is now. So the idea under this is to, you know, if not monthly, quarterly or whatever, look at what's going on. Talk about what technology might be out of there. You know, maybe one of the old paper mills decided to get funded, fire back up, and react kind of during the year. That's what this one is about. And in the spirit of that, we just Tuesday, GP accepted our invitation to come in and present their Juno technology to our solid waste advisory committee. And then finally, the last 10, are simply all the things that we currently do, continuing to improve public education, although maybe with a little more slant on tourists than we've had in the past. Hold at least one household hazardous waste event this year. That's going to be Saturday, July 21st in Toledo. Continue to support the forest enforcement program, continue our recycle lake and paint program, and then modify our emergency debris management plan as needed. Some of you may recall that that was one of the other things the SWAC worked on a couple of years ago. And that's it.
Questions of Mark?
Had your group considered communications with larger companies like Walmart or Costco or something about packaging that could put so much plastic into the world? I know that there are ways of reducing that, and recently went to Costco and they've made a change in one of their packaging things that was a great improvement, and I just wondered if you would.
Well, the SWAC didn't talk about doing that directly, but what we have been doing is spending quite a bit of time. We've done several radio shows, and we're putting a lot of focus back on the power of the consumer. Okay, so if you stop buying things that come in a number 5 tray that can't be recycled, guess what? They're not going to stay on the shelf very long.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, and I'm going to sound like the 1960s kid from Eugene, Oregon, about I am, it's amazing the response that's happening already in this little county. There was an example of some local wheat or something thing that had switched to putting their stuff in plastic instead of the biodegradable bags they had before. They were on the shelves for about a week. Everybody in this county said, not buying that stuff if you're putting it in plastic. The other awkward part about places like Walmart, now this will surprise you, as the solid waste district manager, I do not get to see what Walmart collects in terms of recyclable material. It goes to DEQ. Supposedly it gets added into our statistics. I partially don't believe that that gets done very well, but that's the way it's set up. And yet we do take all their trash. So it's a little bit of a blind spot that we don't influence very well, other than, as I said, through the
been on the radio with Chuck a couple of times. We've been getting a really good response to this idea that, you know, it's the choices you make are more important than ever. So, but a good idea, something that we could think about.
Okay.
Again, last minute questions.
Are we going to be asked, or the city's going to be asked, to formally adopt this updated plan at some point?
What we've been saying is to send a letter of support.
Okay.
Meaning they agree with recommendations, because ultimately it'll be a county plan that's adopted.
Okay. So by us.
Now, but that's every city.
But it's getting there.
That's what I've heard from the other cities.
Yeah.
So when the close have a resolution, if you want to adopt all these same goals, that'd be great. But that, at minimum, we'd like to be able to come into the Board of Commissioners and say, hey, we've added 1,000, every city thinks this is a great idea.
I think it's worth noting, as we heard at the SWAC meeting, that when the tour happened, what was it, last Friday, that the SMERF evidently was congratulating our county on how much better our waste, you know, how people are doing with their recycling, that it's noticeably better and that they really appreciated it. So in spite of all the sometimes negative comments I see on Facebook, it looks like actually people are responding positively for the most part.
I appreciate you remembering that, because as you can imagine, Lincoln County is 1% of the population of the state.
Exactly.
For a big operation like that to actually notice us, that is pretty amazing.
Yay us. So I'd just like to make one other comment. It would be, this is an area where I think the county could really help out some of the cities, however. Harry was talking about some of the packaging concerns. It is very difficult as a smaller city to implement something like a bag ban or some of the packaging bans or some other restrictions when we become a tiny pocket in the community. It would be much easier for us if there was a countywide discussion, if we were joining forces with the county to look at solutions like, you know, a plastic bag ban throughout, or some of the other packaging restrictions where we could give retailers enough time to search and come up with solutions. I mean, if you remember back in the, what was it, late 80s, early 90s, McDonald's was given several years to change their packaging from the styrofoam packaging to, and they did come up with some great solutions. I think that we owe it to our retailers to give them that time, but, you know, from a standpoint of just Walmart going out on their own, for example, it creates a huge disparity, because consumers can then be pointed to, oh, well, if you want this, you can just go here.
Right.
And it's not that people are seeking out plastic bags, but there is a level of inconvenience, there is a level of reluctance. And it's hard for us to implement a change that might hurt our local merchants if we don't see that change kind of being led from above. So I think it would be very helpful.
I'm glad you said that, because we connect what you said and what you said. If you remember that goal to monitor what's going on and then think of solutions, there's no reason why the SWAC couldn't decide that.
I was
okay,
just going to say that to me.
We're going to take on that particular goal. What could we influence if we band together, you know, all of us, as opposed, as you say, taking it on one at a time? Good point. Yeah, that's certainly within the scope of what's intended under that goal.
I have one other question. After reading the report, or as I'm going through, if you're taking all this compostable material and trucking it all the way to the valley, it seems like wouldn't there be an opportunity here to have a composting place a lot closer?
Well, I'll give you the short answer, and I would encourage you to call me, because when I came here 10 years ago, we were going to have local composting.
Oh.
The trouble is, when I came here 10 years ago, DEQ also revised all their composting rules. So the answer is yes, we could do it, but because of our climate, PRC is allowed to have open berms of compost material.
Oh.
Ours would have to be impervious slab, undercover,
right.
You know, the expenses just skyrocket.
Okay.
But again, you know, it doesn't mean that there couldn't be a right time at some point, that it literally is just the financial, how much would you have to pay versus how much you earn on little bags.
It's the volume.
Well, my thinking was that the cost of manpower and gasoline and fuel to get it to the valley and, you know,
Without the big benefit, in case you're not aware, any of the material that's already going to the landfill, that doesn't count extra woody debris, like you were saying, that was getting dumped, it's already going in a garbage truck. ERC is right across the street, literally. So there is no extra transportation cost, you're just putting it in a different truck, with the exception of there being additional material.
But it's still all that tonnage you have to move.
Right.
Right.
All right, any other questions, we'll move on.
Well, the agenda item also says biosolids, has Mark got something for us on that?
I didn't have anything on biosolids.
Okay.
Particularly.
That's fine.
I thought I heard a rumor about biosolids.
Yeah.
Oh, Wayne's gonna address that.
I was looking at Wayne.
You can say, listen. Wayne Delmar, Mayor Council, and you may not have received yet, because I think we just stuck this in the mail yesterday, but the Board of Commissioners has mailed a letter to each of the entities, it's not just cities, but districts in the county that are involved in treatment of sewage. And it really, this is something that has come up to the Board of Commissioners over the course of the last month or so. In which we have had a number of constituents come to us and talk about the land application of treated sewage and problems that they're seeing with the program and the regulation of that particular activity. And brought us some pretty compelling information that's made us ask a lot of questions and find that we don't really have answers. And we want to actually get more answers. We've been talking to the about some of this stuff in terms of their program for land application of this. But we really need to get more information. And the issues are concerning to us, especially in terms of what we see is the potential for some lax regulation and enforcement of existing rules, but also the whole question of the land application is a question that's actually occurring across the nation. We've had 25 years of experience of doing land application of the end product of the treatment process. Is that the best way to handle that? We have questions about that. And since unfortunately, that most of the treatment occurs inside incorporated cities, but the application occurs in the unincorporated areas, they're coming to us and asking for answers. And we want to seek some answers and be able to address that. So this request is, there was a lot of effort to say to the county, well, why don't you stop land application? We took a look at some of the rules and said, we will, for a couple of reasons. One is that this is a state-regulated program right now, number one. And then number two is that we need to learn more about this before we take any action. But in the meantime, while we try and gather some information, we want to talk to you, the actual parties that engage in the treatment of effluent, and as well as our regulators on a state and federal level, we are actually asking that you temporarily halt the land application in the unincorporated areas of Lincoln County while we gather this additional information. So we've made that request to each of the cities and the districts that are engaged in this particular practice. Well, we try and convene all the parties together. We're going to work very hard to get everybody together and talk about this and see, you know, what's going on here, what's happening with the program, what might be some alternatives or other solutions to this particular issue, and what kind of impacts this particular practice has on our rural areas, rural communities. So that's the gist of it. And I'm sorry because I don't know if you've actually officially received this letter. We're here, we want to talk to you about it now.
Thank you.
Okay. Questions?
I did have one. After the 25 years they've been doing this, don't they already have enough information?
I would say that might be debatable. From what we were hearing from folks out there about the impacts of some of this. And again, the part of the issues that we were hearing, very specific instances and circumstances where there are certain state regulations and rules that they're not followed. It's kind of one of those situations, make an analogy to some of the other regulatory schemes that the state engages in. They have one person who handles this entire region and area who has to deal with enforcement to make sure that things are done the proper way, to make sure that all the rules are being followed. And there's I guess the information that was presented to the Board of Commissioners, it raised enough concerns and questions in our minds to say, is this being done properly? Even if it's okay to do it in the first place, is it being done properly? So we have a lot of questions that we need to have answered.
And I think it's safe to say that over the 25 years, certainly the science, the technology, and the processes have changed and evolved. So what might have seemed okay or acceptable in years past may no longer be so. So again, opportunity to just gather data and understand the situation and then see what solutions there may be. All right. Move on to, we've got about 25 minutes. County Code Enforcement Program. Who's doing the honors? Looks like Sheriff Myers.
Good evening. Sheriff Myers, County Sheriff. I think the update, if I'm correct, that where we're at with the program. And we are very close to having that bill for the county. We have a vehicle ready to go. We have a person that we've identified, an applicant that's in background investigation. And as soon as that's completed, everything goes the way we want it to, and it's successful, then we'll have that person on very shortly to start to put it in the county. Applicant is from Wyoming, so it takes a little bit longer in the background to send somebody back there and do an appropriate background, but they do come with very good experience, and my understanding that they've had national code enforcement training and can really step in and probably hit the ground running. So hopefully we're hoping that all goes well.
So we do expand on procedures of violations so people understand how this is going to go.
As far as when we have a complaint, what we're going to do, this type of thing?
Right. What you, right.
Yeah, so you know, this is new for us, for the sheriff's office. It's new for the county to have actually a code enforcement. Somebody just identified to go out and do code enforcement. I know cities have long had code enforcement officers, and you can kind of tell by how the city codes are followed compared to the county codes. We have a lot of issues around the county, and I know this person's going to be very busy as soon as they get going. So how I see a complaint coming in, we get a complaint, however that comes in, the person will go out to investigate a complaint. Our number one concern is compliance. You know, we're not going to go out just wanting to write a bunch of tickets. That's not the whole goal. The goal is compliance on making sure that the violation is corrected and that it's under the code as we move forward. I think that's the best way to go. Obviously, you still have the opportunity to cite if it doesn't go that direction for further compliance, but the main goal is compliance to have a person correct that issue. Is that where you're going with that?
Right, I wanted to, since I've been involved in this from day one, it's not to go out and be the heavy hand. But for those that don't, you could ultimately wind up being cited and being charged. And then if it isn't done right, then you could wind up adding to the, losing the property eventually. Absolutely. And that's a long process with a lot of lawyers. It's not going to happen overnight, but it starts with that citation, and that's one of the problems. Is cities got their code enforcement officers. We saw more and more people move to the county because there wasn't one.
So your system is complaint-driven then?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it'll be some self-initiated, I'm sure, but I know there's already a number of complaints ready to be investigated. Initially, it'll be complaint-driven until we can get a handle on things, and then it'll probably go a little more self-initiated activity, yes.
Okay.
So this is the county's first code enforcement officer, essentially.
Well, under us, I remember. I don't know if the county's had anything.
Wayne?
I've been here 30 years.
I've been here 30 years, and we have not had someone dedicated exclusively to code enforcement. I think just before I came on board, there was a code enforcement officer back in the early 80s, I think, may have been the last time I actually had someone full-time focusing on code enforcement.
And this person, we expect it all to go smoothly to be on board when?
Well, backgrounds, I'm thinking by August 1.
Okay.
You know, we got a special person coming to Wyoming. I don't know logistically as far as moving, how much time you need to get them and move out there. The applicant comes highly recommended, so I hope that all works out.
So then, one last comment about it. I guess we have, or in my, the reason I push this so hard is because we have a tourist area, and we have a choice of how we're going to live and how we're going to manage the county. And it is almost like an infection. When you have this get started, it starts to grow and grow and grow, and it attracts others that do the same thing. And this is an attempt to try to thwart what I think is a trend that's already started, not caused strictly by the cities, but it's a trend to move toward junkyards out in the rural part of the state is one of them.
You don't have to drive very far to see some very obvious violations in the county.
No.
I think my biggest question in kind of prefacing was this, the first is this person going to be able to meet the capacity?
Oh, I see we're going with that.
We're putting a band-aid on a huge hole.
We know the problem's severe. I mean, we need to get the program up and going and then see where we go from there. You know, we don't want to start big and then have to scale back if there's not an issue, if one person is able to handle it. But, we'll see as that goes, how much work there is, and where we go from there as far as identifying the need for further personnel for that.
And one of the other things, too, is we have to see the budget part of this, because you can want something, but can you afford it?
Yeah, so where does the budget come from?
It's a portion of the general fund that we get funded, and also a portion of the vacation rental dwelling fees that we've been collecting since that program's been in effect. We're able to put that together to manage the program. Commissioner Thompson actually came to me well after the budget process last year and talked about the concept, which I was very supportive because I knew there was a need of it, and our deputies just don't have time to deal with code enforcements out there. We want to try to put something together and working with our finance department, and put together enough money to fund the program.
Well, I have a couple of quick thoughts. Number one, if we don't have somebody to enforce the codes, then the codes will really become somewhat meaningless. There's no reason. Second of all, certainly this is a step in the right direction, at least to be able to start enforcing the codes and then monitor and see what kind of volumes, what kind of costs, and what additional needs there might be and how to possibly address them. So,
well, the funding's not there, but you have a backlog. Is there any way to fund it so you can kill the backlog, and then, then you would pare it down, but there's a big backlog out there.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, we barely pieced the funding together to get this started.
Right.
We do have in the sheriff's office, we do have some on-call temporary deputies that do like the vacation rental dwelling inspections. They do other things for us, and we do have a fund for that we're hoping that this person works in conjunction with them, and initially if there's other violations and we have additional work to get that workload down, we can put it on them. We have actually retired deputies that are doing the on-call work, so we can utilize them too if we need to.
Okay, move on. Thank you, Sheriff. County Commons, Commissioner Hall?
Yes. I'll try and make it short and sweet and be happy to have questions if there are any. Next Thursday night, June 14th, the consultants are coming back to both the Fair Board and the Master Plan Steering Committee with a revised plan. It still is going to need some tweaks and further details, but essentially it is something that we can do within our existing resources, the money we've already got banked, plus the projected room tax revenue going out into the long range. Calls for a 15,000 foot exhibit hall, smaller than we were originally hoping to do, but the same size as the current building, but instead of being 70 years old, full of posts, and which really limits its support posts, which really limits its versatility. A new modern facility, a 25,000 square foot outdoor pavilion with a cover, and repurposing the thrift store building for use by 4-H, and that's it. Basically, and then we will schedule soon. I believe we haven't yet, is that correct? But we will be scheduling soon three final public meetings, one in North County, one in Central County, one in excuse me, South County for people to give feedback on this plan, and then it'll be just final decision-making by the Fair Board and ultimately the Board of Commissioners on how, when we proceed.
So is does this revised plan reflect one of the choices that the consultants, I mean, they had A, B, and C, and I think there were different sizes.
It's a modification.
Okay. And this one comes out with covering the county's expenses?
Yes, that even if there is a gap, I believe, Wayne, is it like in the neighborhood of 125 to 150 a year in deficit between operating revenues and operating costs, that there is more than enough in the room tax revenue. We're projecting, I think, about $550,000 a year in room tax revenue between 2007 and 2016 vote. So even devoting $400,000 to that a year over 30 years for the capital costs, that still leaves $150,000 a year cushion.
So there's some cushion
there. Yeah.
As we do seem to go roller coastering.
Exactly. So I would imagine if we have good revenues, if the usage for the is greater than anticipated, we'd start to build up probably a maintenance and operating reserve, wouldn't you think?
So just out of curiosity, in the county, do we know how many kids are involved in FFA and 4-H?
FFA is not active right now. I don't know off the top of my head 4-H. We can get that number from Todd Wilbur.
I just was curious. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a thing of the past, it seems like, and our county isn't terribly agricultural anymore.
Although 4-H is evolving, kind of not strictly, it's becoming a broader youth program. I mean, ag is always going to be a big part of it, but they're realizing they have to change with the times too. And Todd, how long has he been here, Wayne? Do you remember? 3-4 years? I think he's done a lot to, 4 years, okay, a lot to build the program in that time, but he sees there's a potential for a lot more growth.
The other thing I'd say, excuse me, Commissioner, the estimated revenues from the transient room tax are already about 15% above what were projected when those ballot measures were put before the voters. So, and part of that, big part of that is the vacation rental revenue. But again, the projections were conservative and we're already over those as far as revenue that will be available to debt service the bonds as well as support the operations of the facility.
So you feel like there's enough cushion that even though we go through other downturns, we'll still not be impacting essential services?
I mean, the people who are putting out there that this is going to cost $500,000 a year in general fund revenue, there's just no basis for that, period.
Well, especially if you reduce the size.
That's why, they were assuming that the big wish list that we were going to build all of it, and we said we're going to build within our means.
Well, the other thing to put if there was a deficit that the county had to support, to put it in perspective, I mean, pick a big number. Say it was $125,000 a year that the county had to subsidize the operations of that facility. We got a $40 million general fund that would be able to provide those revenues. Put it on perspective of a household. Instead of $40 million, talk about a household with $40,000 income. That $125,000 at the county level is $10 a month allowance to your child. They have $40,000 a year household income. So pretty
good to have a banker on the board.
So
you made a statement about county agriculture. County agriculture is the biggest business in the county, but it's fisheries.
And timber.
Over 10%, which is the largest section of our economy.
Yeah.
Farming and agriculture is only about 0.2%.
Right.
And so, if you looked at it realistically, for an agriculture, we probably should be building a building that's on the waterfront, not on
more of the water.
For the amount of people and the amount of income that's generated, which is realistic probably, but I mean, for our agriculture business, I've got a little bit of a problem there because I'm in the fisheries and I don't see the effort, even though one of my first classes, class that I ever took in fisheries, was a 4-H class. it is offered.
Yeah, I was
thinking. That's about the extent.
Yeah, I was thinking of it at the kids' level, you know, and obviously, if it's growing, that's great, because I think, you know, especially people our age, that's kind mm-hmm. of the, you know, important part mm-hmm. of life, is those fairs mm-hmm. and the 4-H and all mm-hmm. of that. But I didn't know how relevant it was at this time.
One final comment. It's positive that agriculture, the farm gate agriculture, is probably the fastest growing. It's the smallest, but it also has
space.
Hasn't
it gone, I think, according to our economic studies, from something like you said, it was 0.2%, but now it's like 0.8%, which is still
not
small.
Like that, but it's,
I thought it was a pretty dramatic
growth. It's
pretty
dramatic, but they've seen that.
2 or 3 times. All right, again, in the interest of time, try to move along. Mm-hmm. Is there other questions on that? Fire district boundaries, I don't know, is that your agenda?
So this was actually something that came up when we were looking at overall property tax distribution and how many of the small municipalities were going out for different bonds this last year and over previous years. One of the things that has come up and has been a topic in the past is kind of a countywide initiative to start consolidating some of these fire districts and building out a more centralized program to take care of economies of scale, because some of these bonds are eclipsing or equaling or eclipsing even city revenues from property taxes. And so it's starting to be, in essence, bigger than cities.
Well, I think there was an effort in Newport to try to do that. It was not successful. I guess I'd look at my fellow commissioners, but to me that effort needs to, I think, start at the fire district levels. And
see, I think the problem there is that fire districts are their own little fiefdoms.
Right.
It's never going to work from the fire district levels.
Yeah.
This is where we have to look to the county and the county commissioners, frankly, for leadership. This has got to start coming from the county and creating an opportunity for the conversations between the different districts so they can start to see how they might merge, realize economies of scale, and how they might be able to reform.
Okay.
We can certainly try to encourage.
Still a topic, you may.
There's a very expensive study that was done, Dan, and Newport was the only person that wasn't played. And Newport stopped it from happening. The consultants were brought in, we worked on it for 3 or 4 years. We talked to people, we had many meetings of the Newport City Council thing, and the night that it came to vote, Newport voted it down.
The other thing is, I think you talk about fire districts, you can talk about law enforcement districts.
Exactly.
I mean, it makes a lot of sense to have a unified law enforcement district
exactly.
for the county. When you talk about economy of scales, and opportunities, and
it's funny that you bring that up.
It's a challenge to get people to discuss it and look at possible savings and benefits.
Yeah, there was a big effort in that respect, I believe, around the year 2000, but again, some of the cities did not want to give up local control.
We can force
water districts.
We can force it.
Yeah.
But to kind of tie into your point that you brought up. The city of Walport receives about $750,000 in property tax revenue. We spend almost half of that on our contract with the sheriff's office.
Yeah.
That is up from a third of that about 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It has, and Mayor and I were discussing this earlier today, it has started to cripple the ability to engage in any civic or economic driving projects in the city. To the point where we are starting to have real discussions about what would happen if we stepped back or even stepped away from that sheriff's contract. And we are very happy with the sheriff's contract. We appreciate it and we value what it brings, but it is starting to cripple our economy here. It is starting to cripple our ability to run the city here.
Mm-hmm. No, I understand totally.
Well, I think to the bigger picture, I think, recognizing that it probably is never going to happen from the bottom up. So whether it's the state or the county or what power you even have, it seems like it's going to have to be some kind of incentives, disincentives, something to give people the reason for, you know, really getting serious about talking about these things. Because I think economically we just can't afford to keep going on with all this duplication of effort that we have.
Can I make a comment?
Sure, sorry.
I've been the person who sat at the seat in the legislature and tried to straighten out school districts.
There you go.
It should be drawn on county line, the logical thing to do. That is virtually the same thing. You're just beating your head up against the wall to try to do it. It makes sense to make it economy by size.
Absolutely.
But once they've created these small school districts, they will not give them up.
Yeah.
And for various reasons, it's just, but politically, my advice is just let it button go along with the ride. Because it is,
or people, other mayors.
People want to go in the opposite direction. I mean, remember efforts to split this district in two or in four?
Yeah. I was on the school board.
Yep.
Walpole was going to succeed from the
school district.
Thank God that happened.
Right.
A lot of people wanted it.
Yeah, they were talking about closing the high school too.
It's just one of those fights. Yeah.
I think it's a fight that we're looking for some leadership to help to try to, you know, maybe it is butting our head against the wall, but if we don't butt our head against the wall, it's never going to change. And to give you an idea, revenue, I mentioned the revenue for the city, revenue from the fire district for that area is virtually two-thirds of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it is essentially as if they were two-thirds the size of the city right now. And they really don't necessarily have the funding that they, you know, as we keep doing this, these little districts are going to start turning down, much like the sheriff's bond that failed. Mm-hmm. We're going to start to see these bonds fail, the backlash against the increased push on the citizens is going to start hitting, and we're going to start losing these revenues. The same token, cities are going to be forced into positions as our contributions go up to having to scale back our contributions as well. And just to be able to put, you know, basic investments in what we need to do to continue growing as a city.
And which you don't have the money,
could I
then maybe you'll combine.
Yeah.
Sorry. Sure, go ahead.
Before we close it out, this is a subject dear to my heart. I'm a member of the advisory committee for the local fire district. And it's always been our contention that Seal Rock, Yahats, and Walport already are doing so much sharing of the duties and the responsibilities around here. It makes very little sense to have three separate entities, three separate bond issues, three separate budgets. I did a very amateur analysis because I am by nature an accountant. The combination of all of these into one, excluding Newport, because that's a city facility now, it's not a district, you would save the cost of one whole district.
Believe it.
Mm-hmm. By having one fire chief, even if you kept two assistant fire chiefs. The captains that we have on board now, the manpower that we have right now is actually more than what we anticipated in this, again, amateur analysis. But it's something that would benefit. It's not just a matter of dollars, it's a matter of safety in a lot of cases. And it's something that, like Dan said, it's going to have to start at the top because nobody will talk about it at this level.
Can't be chased to start at the bottom. I disagree with you.
That's
you've got to start with the bottom where you guys hurting bad enough.
Well,
and
we started as far as, you know, insidious rumors and comments and that, but it's not going anywhere.
I listen to the constituents. So the constituents go to their fire boards and say, or their elected officials and say, these are things we need. I think they listen. And
well,
so.
This.
Well, and then would be able to act. So, I mean, it's every time I bring it up, you get pushback.
Exactly.
And I've talked about it many a time.
And what does that tell you? We're getting pushback from one entity, and that's the one right in the middle. The boards.
Doug.
Yes.
Back. There's a man with his hand up.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, I think.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
The short ball guy in the back. Sorry.
Yeah. Gary.
Yeah, Gary Woodson, Fire Chief of Central Coast Fire and Rescue. We're sensitive to what you're saying. What I can tell you is, I've been here a little over a year. We have great working relationships with Yahats and Seal Rock. We respond together on things.
part of the analysis they did several years ago is to, you know, how can we get to that point? You know, either through intergovernmental agreements, through mutual aid agreements. We have automatic aid agreements that are set up now. We do group purchasing together. And you're right, you can't have three fire chiefs, you can't have this and that, but the bottom line, and I've done a lot of analysis and studying of the consolidation. Now, Tualatin Valley is the premier example of how to do this properly. But as they said, you got to check the egos at the door to start with. And that's the problem. You've got three different patches, three different names, three different colors of trucks, and everybody, well, we don't want to give up our little kingdom here. And that's, you know, until you have some honest discussions, that's where we're at. But I can tell you from my standpoint and my board, we want to work and partner and do things and get the biggest bang for the taxpayers' bucks.
Last thing I'll say is, I look at the police force for Wilsonville. They look like the Wilsonville police, the county employees. All right, we're more or less out of time. Is there any agenda item we want to bring to the top quickly?
I think there's a really important one, and that's the Crestline Drive and the safe routes to schools.
Okay.
That's been an issue. I think we've had some discussions with the county in the past, but looking at improving the pedestrian access along that, and I think that there are funding opportunities available. We certainly intend to apply for the safe route to schools, and we hope the county will partner with us in that much of Crestline to the school is the county's, not ours. And you know, I'll bring the COG into play, and we will get as many people involved in this as possible. I think we have a very strong potential there.
I know we've addressed other issues and speaking about some things. Director Kenyon, go ahead.
Roy Kenyon, Lincoln County Public Works Director. And as far as the safe routes to school, we actually had a conversation with Carrie. You know, we're part of that. There's been conversations with Crestline, the sewer project, and possibility of jurisdictional transfer down the road. We've had some questions about speed zones up there. To keep it short and sweet, yes, we're in, and the speed zone is actually wrong. The posting got changed, I guess. I guess last year when we did that additional shoulder pay, there was 25 mile an hour signs, and all got moved down the road. So now there's these awkward overlapping speed zones. Depending on which way you're going, you've got a different speed. Basically, talked to Scott Monday night when we had a meeting down here about the Edmund Creek closure. Finally got a guy down there this morning to take a look at it, and they called me back extremely confused. And so it will be fixed tomorrow.
Yay! Thank you.
The other thing is there is an awkward combination of signs. As you're headed south, once you get to green where the school zone starts,
right,
there's a 40 mile an hour sign just before that. And you look at it and it's like, well, why?
Exactly.
Well, I can honestly say that is the way the state speed board wants it. It is the way it is because they told us that's the way it needs to be.
Yeah.
But it is kind of awkward. But if you read the school zone sign, it's actually only 20 basically during hours of school and when children are present. So if you're driving through there at 10:30 at night, you can actually drive 40. Or if you're driving through there Saturday or Sunday or Christmas Day or that kind of thing, the speed limit's 40. And that's why it's set up that way. But it's kind of an awkward read when you first see it.
Yeah.
Didn't we put a sign up that gave an advance warning of the school?
Yes, there is.
Yeah, I thought we did that in response.
Yeah, there is an advance warning, but it's advance warning 40 mile an hour and then 20 mile an hour school zone. And if you're somebody that actually drives down the road reading the sign, it does take you back a little bit. Most people don't see any of them.
So in an effort to try to at least hit on some of the others, I know Commissioner Hall would like to talk about affordable housing. Alternate routes, is that something Roy or alternate routes, 101 Highway 34 emergencies?
The only thing that came to my mind was...
Carey County City Manager, that was just real quick, it was one that actually City Recorder Eckerman...
Oh, yeah.
in a staff meeting, we were talking, it was after the bridge, something South Beach, there was an accident. The road was closed for 6 hours, and there's a lot of either misinformation or lack of information or lack of knowledge about routes to get around 101 and 34 in an emergency. So it's just maybe somehow opening a dialogue to see if there's a way to...
I had a conversation with Director Kenyon on that exact issue.
Right.
Yeah, damn Google.
Yeah.
Well, the issue for the county during that specific incident was the fact that 101's closed, and evidently there's people who are south of the accident trying to get north or east, and there was people on the north end trying to get south. And if you pull up the map, Google it, it shows that North Beaver Creek Road is an alternative route. And we actually had a call or an email from somebody that actually lived on North Beaver Creek Road, said that it was busier than they'd ever seen it, that there was people driving that road that had no business being on a paved road. And the further up you go, North Beaver, the more of a goat trail it looks like. And it's not built for two-way traffic. The unfortunate thing is one, it was an accident on a state highway on a weekend. I didn't know about it until I heard about it start of the week. And then my first thought was, I wonder if people actually use North Beaver to get around. It wasn't about a day we got an email. And so in that case, specific case, if it was happened during a time that the crews were on, or that we actually got some kind of notification. I don't know exactly how we would do it, but I had thought about trying to somehow regulate traffic on one end or the other. On the Toledo end, it's kind of a tough way to go because there's so many routes to come in, but on the 101 end right there at Ona, you know, it might be some kind of warning. Other than that, it's kind of a free-for-all. We all know that there's a lot of poor service roads that kind of head east from here. I don't know if there's any way to regulate that. As far as trying to regulate what people see on their phone, we made an attempt once to get a change, and we might as well go and talk to them. They had absolutely no concern whatsoever.
Well, I remember back when the slide happened south of Yahats, there was big talk at that time of trying to designate and have alternate roads in case of emergencies like that, and being we're in this tsunami zone, you know, or other, you know, things happening, it seems like there should be some kind of, but I know in that case it failed because the Forest Service didn't want to spend the money to take care of the roads, and they didn't want people on them unimproved, so it just kind of went nowhere. But
right. Well, as far as our roads, it's, you know, they are public roads and they're open for public use.
Right.
It's just that if we were aware of it, we would try to somehow improve the current situation to try to head off any kind of accident.
Yeah.
You know, and then we got both routes closed.
Right.
But other than that, yeah, the Forest Service is in a whole different situation.
I think maybe, you know, the kind of the end, the gist of it is, it would probably be good if the county spent some time and or, and I hate to say money, but identifying the appropriate routes around, you know, some critical choke points, and made those maps available in some fashion as kind of an identified, okay, if this bridge is closed, here's a route, and by the way, here's some pictures, here are the conditions. Try to avoid it if you can.
Right. Well, see, I disagree. I slightly disagree because there's only so much you can do with some of our routes. Like North Beaver Creek Road, I wouldn't advertise that to anybody as an alternate route.
The problem is you don't advertise it and people end up going on it because they're looking for a way. You know, they're looking
GPS sensors.
Right.
Yeah. That's, I mean.
And that airport area is difficult because there really isn't any other way to get around unless you go back. Come back out and go around. Some of the other ones are a little easier. Seal Rock area is a little easier because we have Bayview, South Beaver, North.
Well, and maybe that's where you limit your choices. Maybe that's where you limit the map to say, okay, here's the Bayview loop, but you do the others. I mean, it was not 3 years ago that there was an accident on 34, and one of the sheriff's deputies actually pointed me across a bridge up there. Thankfully, I was in my truck because 2 hours later, I ended up coming out somewhere near Yachts. I still don't know what route I took or where I went. But, you know, at some point we don't have those identified. We are going to have tragedies where people try to get around.
And I think maybe the thing to do is not send you over the hill to Yamaha's.
I would appreciate that. Well, the road was open by that point.
Generally speaking, there's almost so much you can do in a short period of time when something happens. And even if it's mapped out and well signed, there's just some places you just don't want to send some people. And so it's kind of like, well, go ahead and park in place. It's going to be X amount of time. If you think that you could do better driving the state system and going back around, I encourage you to do so. But otherwise, it's better to stay here. I mean, because, yeah, I mean, there's people that go out there and get lost and you don't ever see them again. And I mean, really, you know, that's kind of the issue. And so it's almost like instead of encouraging people to go south or go north because that will eventually come out somewhere, it's better to try to encourage them to
Even a statement that says, by the way, we know that there is an access. We really think you should go to Corvallis and back.
Right.
This is not a safe access.
Right.
That would go a long way.
Right. And the other thing is Facebook kills us on that stuff, too. You know, I mean, the word gets out, being, oh, I know so-and-so says, Joe says you can go over the hill and come out wherever, and everybody's headed that way. So, but we recognize that there is an issue.
How are you going to do it? Because you're right, you got Facebook and you got GPS. Yeah. And I'm not going to carry an alternate route map with me everywhere I go. Yeah. Just waiting for the accident. It's a tough one.
Yeah, if you can drive and follow directional signs, you're probably in good shape.
Yeah.
Because that road's probably improved enough that it's safe for everybody to drive.
So, one quick comment. If we start putting out a map like that, we become liable.
Yeah.
So, we wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
It's up to you. If you want to follow your Facebook, have a good time, or your GPS, but the county doesn't want to start getting something where we're liable for something that is an unusual sort of
sign for that kind of traffic.
Right. So.
All right, we've got two items left. I know Commissioner Hall wants to talk about affordable housing. The marijuana pilot project, Council Belmont?
I can do it in 30 seconds.
Speed up, please.
County has money in its budget for their education project we've talked about in the past. We'll be talking to you if there's any funding that the city has available to partner with us. We're going to do a program, and hopefully we can get some participation in the cities. We'll talk more.
We're trying to get, talk about economies of scale,
yeah.
Trying to get a little more resources if we all work together and then develop a more comprehensive, robust education prevention program. So any support that the city might be able to offer would be appreciated.
Let's send that proposal.
Okay. Last on the agenda, affordable housing, Commissioner Hall.
Thank you, Chair Hunt. Just two very quick significant things that have come out the last 2 weeks, actually, the last two Fridays, and very happy to say that my efforts, the efforts of a lot of people, I think are starting to really pay off with some tangible results. Governor Brown's workforce housing pilot project for rural areas. There were 30 projects that applied. 5 were funded. 1 was for the Lincoln Community Land Trust. Thank you for your support of the Land Trust through the years. $515,000, second highest award under this project. We still don't know the exact contract terms, but we're figuring that will allow us to provide down payment grants for at least 10 homeowners, countywide eligibility. So yay for that. And then last Friday, again, the announcement from Oregon Housing and Community Services of the next round of awards under the LIFT program, Local Innovation and Fast Track, $80 million in bonds for workforce housing statewide. And we bought home a big chunk of it for Lincoln County. It's a private developer out of Portland who's actually going to be doing this project. But $11 million in LIFT funding to put in 100 affordable units. These will rent to people earning 60% or less of area median income. Now that's in Newport, not Ballport, but still, I think bringing 100 new units online all at once, that's going to ease the pressure to some degree, countywide.
Yeah.
And I know it's only a start, but I think these two things are very good milestones.
So So the first one you mentioned, is that the Proud Brown?
Yes.
Okay. So the information about how people avail themselves of that support, is mm-hmm. that something that can be shared, you know, on Facebook and
wherever? Sure, we have, and we'll continue to do okay. that. Yeah. And if anybody's watching or just wants to look up Google Proud Brown Portland, we've done some presentations in the county and we'll do some more. Because in addition to these 10 grants, actually, you know, the county and Lincoln City and Newport provided greater operation capital for the land trust, but because Proud Ground has been able to operate really more efficiently than they had hoped in the county, we are converting some of that money to additional down payment grants, and those are going to be limited to Newport and Lincoln City only because it's primarily the money from those cities. But so you add that in, and in very short order, we're going to have 15 opportunities, and we're finding it does take, and you know, this is no surprise, even a lot of folks who think they might be on the cusp of home ownership, they've got something with their credit
right.
score or other things
right.
that they, it's fixable, but it takes time
right.
to do that. So we're now finally, you know, people said, why weren't you beating the bushes trying to get people on a wait list? Well, we didn't want to do a wait list if we didn't have projects in the pipeline. But actually, in addition to these 15 now, we're going to be putting in a lift application in the fall, working with a private developer who wants to do 5 or 6 units in South Beach. So after kind of being stuck in neutral, what it feels like, you know, for years with the land trust, all of a sudden, you know, we've kicked it into a rocket gear.
Where are the 100 homes going? I've
this
seen
is
confusing.
My understanding is it's that site not too far north of the theater on the east side of the highway that's recently been cleared. You know, if you're heading north, there's the theater, then an existing affordable housing project, and then these 100 units that Commonwealth is doing will go on that site.
Are we going to see any traffic improvements in that area at all? That's
I'm not sure, because that would be an ODOT and city jurisdiction.
So there's no conversations yet with ODOT about that?
Not that I know of, but it's very, I would have to think that Commonwealth has had to talk to them, that they wouldn't be this project. They wouldn't be allowed without,
And ODOT. Is there public transportation that far out?
There is. And
yes.
I think we'll have to have,
just across the street, there's a bunch of affordable housing just to, in the same area.
Yep.
The traffic problem is the problem out there with PUD, all of that. If we keep adding lights, you're going to slow down the traffic and jam it up even more. So it's a problem that's going to have to be worked out with ODOT.
I'm sure ODOT had to buy off access to it.
Yeah.
For sure. All right. We went a little extra, but I allowed us to go a little extra because of the presentation on the solid waste. So, thank you. I think we had some good conversation.
Yep. And, thank you, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
We look forward to continuing the dialogue and getting back to you with progress on some of the other issues. With that, we're adjourned.